Hello. In this audio snippet, we are going to continue talking about the problem with people doing things in an attitude of service or thinking that they are doing some good to other people when they are really not doing anything to really solve anything. And if anything, they are by their inaction, in other words, by them not doing what they're supposed to do, they're making things worse. And that is a big theme in the reason why America as a country is dying and has 7 months or so to live. As a nation with a promise in the future. So we were talking in the previous audio snippet about this player called Damar Hamlin, this American football player that is supposed to be this young Christian, very wholesome young black man who serves, does a lot of social work and tries to, quote, help the kids and things like that. And he has come to light recently because he collapsed during a football game that was being watched nationally, and he almost died on the field, and he miraculously survived and was able to live to tell the tale. Without any brain injury, significant brain injury, and so forth. And we spoke about how he has refused to admit or realize that what happened to him was the result of the injection, and he refuses to point to that as a even as a possibility of why he had that sudden heart situation out of nowhere, because he wants to remain popular. He has that contamination of the service or the server personality that when it becomes contaminated or distorted, it seeks out communion and finds more value in communion than in the truth. And he knows that if he ever really went out and said, "Hey, I am a living example of what's wrong with this injection," if he went ahead and did the brave thing, that he would lose a lot of the popularity that he so craves. And we began to speak about the consequences of his silence, that the players who are dying on the field, including young black kids, that like a tw the 12-year-old young football player who died on a football field during warm-ups here in the New York area, in Newark, New Jersey, a 12-year-old young black kid. That we spoke about in the previous audio snippet, and we spoke of other people, example after example of people that he could have helped save, the type of people he could have helped save if he really cared about the kids, and especially black kids. He could have said things to help these people, but he has chosen not to do so. And we also spoke briefly about this other American football player named Patrick Mahomes, a black quarterback who just won the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, who played against another team that I don't even remember right now, the Philadelphia Eagles. And he's supposed to be a Christian. He has behaved correctly in the past, you could say. But he appeared on this television show with this man called Jimmy Kimmel, who is a worthless, the more appropriate word is he's a turd. That's what he is. A person who thinks that he knows what he's talking about and jokes about it, but he's a leftist liberal. And this Patrick Mahomes went to be on his show, and he was there. The headline in the story on the Daily Mail said Patrick Mahomes reveals all the details of Chiefs' wild post-Super Bowl party and appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, as MVP admits he is yet to go to bed after heading straight to Disneyland with his wife and two children. And in the story, he talks about a lot of stupid things about the party and all this stuff, and that's the sort of thing that the server personality relishes. You know, that party atmosphere, the communion between with other people, that sort of thing. So he went to talk about all that nonsense, and he even spoke about the injury he had during the Super Bowl. He had an ankle injury, but at no point this so-called Christian said anything about God, at least from what I could read in the story. So he made no effort to highlight his God in front of Jimmy Kimmel, because obviously with Jimmy Kimmel that wouldn't resonate. And it wouldn't resonate with the audience that was there that night, because Jimmy Kimmel doesn't attract people who believe in God. So, and he was tired, worn out, and clearly he was more concerned about pleasing his wife and children and pleasing Jimmy Kimmel. And that's what he was working on, and he was tired, exhausted. But it was all for naught, because first of all, he took his kids to Disneyland, and if he's a so-called Christian, then he would understand that supporting Disneyland nowadays is not such a good idea, or at least it's contrary. I mean, if you're going to believe in God, then be consistent. If you don't want to believe in God, then you know, be consistent with it too, and let it take you to the natural consequences. That's what truth requires. You have to be consistent. If you believe something and are consistent with it, you will walk in it and not contradict yourself. It's like you're going to grow in that. If you're standing on the truth, you will grow in that truth, because that truth is inherently consistent. If you are consistently applying a falsehood, the falsehood will eventually lead to a contradiction. It's as if you're consistent with that falsehood, at some point you'll start contradicting yourself. And if you're seeking the truth, you will see that contradiction and say, oh, what I've been believing is not true. And then you change your mind. But so it's important to be consistent, because in your consistency, you start finding what is true and what isn't. But if you're vacillating, then what you're doing is basically just wandering like a lost man in the desert. And so if this guy was more concerned, became more concerned about pleasing his teammates in that post-Super Bowl party, pleasing his wife and kids, taking them to Disneyland, to a place that is very anti-Christian, so he's a Christian, and he's supporting an organization and a place that it is very strongly anti his beliefs. And then he goes on a show to serve this man, this horrible, this evil, stupid idiot, low IQ idiot, and to kind of have some laughs with a whole bunch of people who are completely contrary to his belief system. So that is, and what did he gain from all that effort? He was all tired and exhausted from all of that, and all he did was do more harm than good. And that's what we want to speak about as we go through all these stories that we want to share. It's the futility of service that has that is superficial, that deals with surface things and doesn't deal with the fundamental issues. And it makes you feel good. It makes you think that you are doing something productive, but all you're doing is basically lying to yourself and making the problem worse by not dealing with the root issue. We were saying how Damar Hamlin wants to help the kids, and we began to talk about things that he could do to really help black kids, and talk to one of those things would be to talk about the education, the importance of education, and as he would begin to speak about that, he would then be eventually led to talk about the problem with the bad education that black kids are receiving, or are cultivating, because the black culture does not value education the way other cultures do. Like, for example, Oriental people value education much more than black people. And if he really wanted to help kids, he would start talking about the importance of education, and talking to his fellow black brothers and sisters about how important it is to focus on education, to have a future, instead of blaming the white cracker for everything that's wrong with their lives. They, telling them about taking responsibility and becoming architects of their own destiny, and finding value in education. But he's not doing that. While he's on his journey, the journey that he talks about, the kids that he supposedly wants to help are going to hell. Their lives are losing all purpose. And so we began to talk about the story on the Daily Mail. The headline says, "Where are things going wrong? Damning report finds that there are 23 public schools in Baltimore where none of the children understand basic math, as parents blame Democratic-led cities' fraud and corruption." And so we briefly talked about this story. So in Baltimore is a mostly black city. I don't know the exact percentage, but I do believe that the majority of people, or the largest group, racial group or ethnic group in Baltimore is black people. If they're not the majority by now, and this city that's been run by Democrats since forever has this terrible education system. So Democrats who claim to care about black people, who claim to care about education, and this, that, the other, and the cities that they run have the worst education system possible. So if they really cared about black people, you would think that Democrat run cities would have black students thriving and black in public schools excelling in how in teaching and preparing young inner city kids for a better future, but that's not the case. We mentioned this story how there was a mother that was saying that that she was angry that the CEO of Baltimore Public Schools, a lady named Sandra Santa Santalisis or something like that, was earning a base salary of $333,000, and that salary rose to $444,000 a year with allowances. If you took in allowances, and even so, students were failing. So this person is receiving this incredibly huge salary with no accountability, and that's what's going on, and no one seems to care. And conservatives bring up these stories to make Democrats look bad. But as we tried to explain or mention before, no one seems to propose the exact things that they would do to fix the problem. It's as if it becomes a problem when it can be used to highlight how bad Democrats are. And as we've said before, whenever Republicans are in power, crummy as they are, generally Black lives improve. The things are better for Black people. There's more employment for Black people. There's less crime, so they can have an opportunity to do something with their lives, and the education is still mediocre, or below average, but at least it doesn't decline as badly. So Black lives are better off with Republicans than with Democrats. But the problem is that Republicans take this laissez-faire attitude, where it's like, okay, we're just going to set things up, and it will naturally work that Black people are going to improve. And because they take that laissez-faire attitude, the improvement that could happen doesn't really happen at the level that it should. And Republicans forget they were the party founded to empower Black people. That's what the Republican Party was founded for. It was a party founded on the idea that we are going to enable the Black man, the Black woman, to achieve and prosper. That was the foundation. And the Republicans have forgot about this, so they have no concrete ideas. And we began to speak just a very few about a very f few ideas that should be spoken by Republicans boldly, to let Black people know, hey, we care about Black kids. We want Black people to improve, but these things have to be dealt with, and then give a list, a concrete list. And we began to briefly say a few things about that. There was another story that came out also from Baltimore. We may have mentioned this before, I don't recall, but it's the story appeared on Fox News, on a FoxBaltimore.com. And the headline said, "Baltimore mother calls on someone, anyone, to fix city schools." And I'm going to read part of this because it's very, very sad. It says, "A Baltimore City mother is calling on someone, anyone, to fix city schools, and she says major changes need to happen now or she's leaving. There's nothing up there for them, nothing. They go there to get babysat for 8 hours and come home," said Michelle Watkins, the mother of a Baltimore City student. "I feel like they don't care. It's not their children. They don't care." Then it says Watkins is exhausted after years of pleading for help from Baltimore City public schools. "Look around. I'm in public housing," she said. "I can't afford no $1,000 tutor from Sylvan, but that's what he needs, a tutor." And then it says her son is in fourth grade at Johnston Square Elementary. For years, she says she's been asking the school system to hold her son back to give him time to learn the material instead of pushing him through the grades. 5 months ago, in October, she even wrote Project Baltimore asking for help, saying her son is not getting the education he needs. And then she says he can't even read. He is in the fourth grade, Watkins told Project Baltimore. How is he supposed to be productive if he can't read? And this is very important, because she, as a mother, says she's willing to hold her son back a year. It's like, please hold him back, so that he can catch up and really learn. Don't just push him through the grades. Imagine a mother saying that. And this shows a mother, and by the way, the mother and the son are Black, and because I see the picture of them here in the story. The thing is that she cares about her kid, and she wants the kid to improve. And she's been pleading, "Someone help, someone help, someone help." And no one is helping, not even the Republicans. There's no one standing up with her and standing alongside of her and saying, "Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to fight for this, that, and the other." Nothing. No one cares. And yes, if a Republican were in power, in office or whatever, things would be better. But it would be this sort of like silent better, marginally better. But there's no one standing up on a pulpit on a soapbox and saying the things that need to be said, and then confronting things head on and challenging Black America too. It's not just doing things for Black America. Black America has to do things themselves, but someone has to call them out on it. Someone in the public eye has to come out and say, you have to do this. You have to take responsibility. And someone could put this excellent mother as an example of the type of people that the Black America needs to improve. But no one is doing that. And this woman is saying, someone do something. The system is broken. We need to fix it. And no one seems to care. And she's right on the spot when she says, you know, that the kids just go there to get babysat for 8 hours and then come home and they don't learn. So at least this woman is invested in her kid and wants her kid to thrive. She knows education is the key for her kid. And very few people in Black America think like that. And there's no politician, no one speaking like that. There's no Damar Hamlin is out doing his own thing. Patrick Mahomes is chatting it up with Jimmy Kimmel, and Republicans are all just grandstanding, and conservatives are, you know, post stories like this, but no one has a concrete idea. Okay, I cared about Black America before these stories came out. I cared about Black education before these stories came out. And I have these ideas that need to be, that we need to implement, and we need to put these things into effect. It's a combination of chiding Black America for the things that they're doing wrong, and at the same time attacking and destroying teacher unions. We've spoken about how the new American Constitution would have made it illegal to have unions in any public office. Public worker unions would be unconstitutional. And we explained before that the reason for that is that when you have a union in the private sector, you have two competing parties who have a vested interest in winning. You know, the employer, if he can pay less salary, you know, that he makes more money. If the employees make more money, you know, then they get more money naturally. But in the public sector, it's not like that, because the two people who negotiate are the unions, who have a vested interest in themselves and supposedly their work, the union members, and the other party are the politicians. And the politicians, if they concede to the union, they don't lose, because they are bargaining with someone else's money. Whose money? The public's money. In the private sector, if I'm an employer and I concede to the union, I have to take money out of my own pocket to pay more money to the union and to the employees. So I have a reason to negotiate and to go back and forth. But a politician doesn't have that, because he's playing with other people's money. And so he can say, oh, union, you want more money? Oh, we can take it from the coffers and we'll give it to you. And remember that I was the one who gave it to you. So the next time there's an election, remember to support me and donate to me so that I can continue giving you more money. So that there is no... in a negotiation, you have to have a situation where you the two parties can lose something, and that's why they go back and forth. But in the union, in the public sector, that doesn't happen. So union should be illegal. And you say, oh, then I don't want to work in the public sector, because, well, don't work in the public sector. If your focus is on making money, then make money in the private sector, where you have to earn it. And if you were focus is true service, you know, speaking of the, you know, that personality of service, if you really want to serve and that's why you're called to work in the public sector, then you will have to make a sacrifice because that's what public service is. That's why it's called public service. It's not called public profit, it's called public service. And all these people are supposed to be public servants, and servants are people who serve you while you sit down. They are standing up, moving all around, doing the work and serving you. And that's the attitude that should be fostered. And it's all related, as we said, to the third pillar of the New American Constitution that we've spoken about it in many, many audio clips ago. And that third snippet, it's one of the five pillars. There are 10 pillars. Five define the nature of authority, and the other five define the five individual rights. So it's 10 pillars. And the third pillar, more or less spoke about how authority is not designed to for self benefit, for vain and self serving benefit, and that's one of the qualities of authority. And on that third pillar would stand the principle that you can't have teacher unions or any type of public sector unions. And we also spoke about how there should be a maximum salary of 1.5 times the national average. So if the national average is $60,000 per year of income, then a public servant would not be able to make more than $90,000 a year, no matter who he or she was. Even if he or she was the president, the greatest congressman in the history of mankind, the top salary would be $90,000. And that would clean out a whole bunch of people from the public sector, because a lot of people who are there for the money, for the power, for the influence, would no longer be motivated. And it's like if you put excrement out on the street, you will draw flies. If you clean out the excrement, then the flies go away. It's like they magically disappear because they're not drawn to anything that is contaminated. In the same way, if you take away that incentive of filthy lucre, then you would draw people who really have a true attitude of service and sacrifice, and people who will care. Then you'll have teachers who have a desire to help, and obviously, once they are there, they're not going to be paid an awful lot of money, but they're going to be treated well, paid promptly, paid correctly. Oh, and by the way, any under the New American Constitution, there would have been no benefits. In other words, you're paid $90,000, and that's all you get. You don't get super Cadillac health insurance. You don't get any perks. For example, all this nonsense that we've had with presidents that take vacations and go home for the weekend, and take Air Force One with a million security people, and they go vacation back in their own homes, like the little son of a bitch who pretends to be the so-called president, that senile bastard boy, who goes to Delaware every weekend. And can you imagine how much money that costs the country to get that little bastard boy to? I mean, he doesn't even have time to go to East Palestine, where there was this big environmental disaster. He has no time for that, but he's going to Delaware, to his house in Delaware, every weekend. And that should come out of his salary. And they'll say, oh, that's unfair. Well, I think the White House is pretty big. I mean, it's not like he's living in a prison. Like in Sing Sing, and he can only have bread and water while he's at the White House, and he needs to escape from that torture and go home to Delaware. And the cost of all the security people that have to go with him, all that should be gone. There should be no perks, nothing. and they should pay taxes exactly like anybody else, at the same rate, just like any person who makes, let's say, $90,000 a year in the public, in the private sector, has to pay taxes a certain way. The same thing would apply to them, because they should feel how it feels to live under the tax system and the law system that they have established. So it should be very straightforward. That's all you get. No benefits, no nothing. But we are going to treat you with respect and give you all the resources that that you need to achieve the purpose. In other words, a teacher, you know, if he needs a certain educational aid, something, some resources, you know, computers or whatever that is needed, that will be supplied in abundance, and they will be protected if they need security. If the school that they're teaching at is violent, they will have the, you know, that sort of thing. So giving them an environment where they can feel happy doing their work in safety and with all the resources needed, but all geared towards the purpose of education, of helping the kids. So we spoke before that the other many other things that could be done, should be done, would be Republicans proposing, for example, that we add more focus on business training from from the early years onwards, so that these black kids in these neighborhoods are taught the idea of how to start a business, practical courses on how to start a business, what you need, you know, what type of paperwork is needed, and where would you file it, and you know, teaching them basic accounting skills, and so forth, so that when they come out of high school, they come out with this idea of, oh, if I have this good idea, I can start a business, and I know exactly how to do it, and I can make money, and I can live the American dream. Just get them thinking that way. I mean, in a subtle way, instead of telling them how much the white cracker is oppressing them and making their lives miserable, so that they can just give themselves a justification for just throwing their lives away. Because that's what they are looking for. These kids are looking for an excuse to not do something with their lives, because that takes dedication, that takes a little bit of drive from inside of them. But if you're constantly feeding this subliminal message of, you know, this is how you start a business, this, that, the other, they will start thinking that way. And then Black America would be rescued. You know, I know Black America is dead as a people. They will not rise to fulfill what they were called to do. But there was still the hope that a lot of individuals here and there would be able to achieve great things and achieve part, if not all, of their calling, even if as a people they had lost it, and they lost it around 2015, some 8 years ago. So it's a shame that there are not more parents like this lady in Black America, and it's a shame that Republicans don't take the opportunity of all of this to say, hey, we're going to stand by you, and we're here for you, Black America, but we're going to call you out on certain things. And one of the other things that also would be very important to do is to help the kids who want to have a better future to be able to go to better schools. You know, like the son of this lady, she wants to take him out of the system because the system is broken. But he has nowhere to, she has nowhere to take him without a great deal of effort. And we should make it very easy for Black kids who have a promising academic future to be able to attend better schools, to go to better neighborhoods, and get them out of the environment of death and despair that they live in the ghettos, and go to places where people have a different perspective on life, that sort of thing. And provide, you know, what some conservatives would call like the voucher system and things like that. But it should be spoken with a passion. People who really care about Black America speaking these things out and making Black America know that they're not saying this just to gain political points, or to make the other side look bad is because they really care about black. That would be the type of service that would produce something. What we have is a lot of people doing a lot of things on the surface and no one doing anything to deal with the root issues. Because dealing with the root issues would imply, as we've said, making black America know you're doing something wrong. You're doing all these things wrong. You have a culture of violence. You have a culture disrespect for women. Using each other. You beget children and then you walk away and you have all these single mothers and you don't take care of what you sow. And you keep justifying your own failures based on racism that no longer exists and on oppression that no longer exists. You inflict this oppression on yourselves and you're accountable for your own futures and you should be ashamed of how you're conducting yourselves. I mean, that should be the other side of it. Saying, I care for you, but at the same time, I'm going to call you out for when you're doing things wrong. And if that means that I'm going to be called a racist, so be it. Because, it's like, as we've said before, it's like we're a family. And if I have a brother who is on drugs, if the family cares for that brother or that family member, they will do this, the famous intervention where they confront the person with what they're doing wrong because they care about the person. And usually the person reacts in anger, like, how dare you judge me? And that's what Black America keeps doing. How dare you judge me? How dare you judge me? Well, you need to be judged. You need to be confronted. And not only judged, but then be infused with a vision, because Black Americans are visionaries. That is one of their traits. We've spoken ad nauseum about the five personality traits. Judge, visionary, conqueror, server, and organizer. And Black Americans have a lot of visionary and conqueror. And those two qualities should be fostered. And that's another thing that that Republicans don't understand. They say, I'm not going to think about race. No, you have to think about race because every race has different qualities, different virtues, and different failings, cultural failings. And we have to foster the qualities, the attributes of each race, and also bolster the weak side of each race. So you can't just think, I don't think about race, I'm colorblind. No, you can't think like that. You have to be aware that there are races, and races have attributes, and you have to treat each race based on the attributes. And you just can't be blind to that, because that's just naive. So another story that came out recently on the Gateway Pundit, it says, in 53 Illinois schools, not a single student can do math at grade level. So it says here, while teachers push critical race theory and the sexualization of children in schools, academic rigor continues to slip lower and lower. It says in 30 schools in Illinois, not a single student can read at grade level. 22 of those schools are in the city of Chicago. Imagine that. In 53 schools, not a single student can do math at grade level. 33 of those schools are in Chicago. And Chicago is run by a liberal nut job, Democrat lady, a crazy leftist idiot, black lady, who is going to hell the day she dies. And this whore is constantly speaking a whole bunch of nonsense, while the school system in her city is completely failing, and it's failing black kids. So this person who pretends to be doing public service and helping black people and speaking all this nonsense and all this leftist nonsense is not doing a single thing. And then on the other side, the Republicans who always do point this out, and it's to emphasize how bad Democrats are, never really propose anything of their own. Like when I read these articles, all I see is the complaining about what's wrong. But these conservatives who post all this stuff don't ever say anything about what needs to be done. Because at the end of the day, they really don't care. They really, really, at the end of the day, do not care. And another story the hap that was posted a few days later, like a follow-up, said on the Gateway Pundit, it said it's worse than first reported. Illinois has 930 schools where only 1 in 10 children can do math at grade level. And then it says, congratulations, liberals. Students in many Illinois schools are so far behind they will be lucky to ever catch up. It says here, anybody following WirePoint's recent reporting on Illinois' educational crisis already knows the numbers statewide. Just 1 of every 10 black students can read at grade level. 1 of every 10 black students. And for Hispanics, it's just 2 in every 10. For white students, it's better but still dismal, 4 out of 10. It's not an exaggeration to say that the state's public schools are condemning an entire generation of Illinois children to failure. So, again, they highlight how wrong it is, and black kids are the ones most impacted. And that's where they leave it. And they just complain, blah, 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 but no one has concrete ideas, because to go to the root of the thing, we have to talk about constitutional issues. And how poorly written the current Constitution is. The American Constitution is a piece of garbage, the current one. That's why we have the decay that we have. That's why the American Republic, left by the founding fathers, died on the 5th of November 2008, and we've been living like on fumes since then, because we've been given an opportunity by the truth to change things and right. And establish a new system that's not matriarchal, as we've tried to explain before, what you know what that means, and change things. But we continue to go down the road. And a matriarchal system is a system dominated by the preserver and organizer personalities. Those are when those personalities are in control. And the other three personalities are subservient to those two, then you have a matriarchal system. And then you have service that doesn't produce real results, because to produce real results, you have to enable the judge personality, the personality goes and cuts to the heart of the matter, like a two-edged sword, just cutting deep into the matter and saying, this is wrong, this is right, this is wrong. And then you have to have true visionaries who are not caught up in futile service, because a lot of people who are visionary get seduced by the server personality to do banal work, just useless work, just like Princess Di doing all this wonderful work around the world, but all her kind dedication, humanitarian work, never really got to the root of the problems that she was supposedly trying to address. So, but when you cut off the matriarchal control, then you raise up visionaries who really bring to others the vision that we must all pursue. It's like they start announcing things, and they start paying a deep sacrifice, a sacrifice that goes way deeper than the futile service that people in the matriarchal system do. You know, all the soup kitchen stuff. Oh, it sounds so, you know, so praiseworthy and so wonderful. Oh, I'm spending time at the soup kitchen, handing out all these meals. But you know, you hand out the meal to one guy, the guy goes and then comes back the next day, comes back the next day, and comes back the next day, and comes back the next day. You haven't changed that person's life. As we've said before, we have, there are so many. There's a church that a block or two from where I live, from where I'm speaking right now, and they have they serve food there, and all the homeless people line up there, and it's. That block is like very dingy. Everything's like dirty, you know, because the homeless people linger around there. They go and line up and get their food and leave. And what change did this so-called Christian church do to these people? If the God that they believe in is so real and so powerful, why doesn't this God transform the lives of these people as they walk into the building, if this God is so real? But there is no God there. There's nothing. It's just emptiness. It's just futile service. People doing all this just useless work. Yes, there is a certain level of compassion, and don't get me wrong, there would be a place for all of that, but in the context of something bigger. Yes, there's some people who are in need, and you have to help them, but it's for a season. You can't, if you institutionalize it, if you make it a permanent thing, and you accept it as a permanent thing, you're just dealing on the surface. These people have lots of problems. They are on the streets, a lot of them, not because society is so evil. Yeah, in some cases it is, but in the vast majority of cases, it's these people have chosen to live like this, addicted to drugs or pursuing this lazy lifestyle, where they expect people to provide for them. They get used to that, and they live like that, and they get served, and they get served. And it's futile. And another story that we wanted to mention is it says, it's a headline that's on the Gateway Pundit. It said, Bernie Sanders calls for minimum pay of $60,000 for all school teachers despite failing public schools. So I don't know why he said this. I don't know if it's in the context of all these stories about all the failing schools, but he said, oh, we have to make sure that we pay them right, a minimum salary of $60,000, and with benefits and all this thing, all this stuff, because it says here, Sanders' call for a minimum salary for public school teachers comes after Bite Me made a pitch for a number of education policies during his quote State of the Union, including providing increased access to preschool and giving teachers a raise. So it's all this nonsense, and with these liberals, it's just about more money, more money. Let's put in more money. That was the problem. But all these people in Chicago and in Baltimore are well paid. The unions are well funded. But the problem just doesn't go away. In I think I forget which of the two, there was a stat that I saw in one of these stories where around $20,000 or $30,000 a year are spent on each student in the public education system. We're putting all this money. Imagine that, $30,000 per kid, and yet you have this crummy education. And remember, it's not like this is not private tutors for each kid. It's you have a classroom of 30 people, 30 kids, and if each one is you're putting $20,000, let's say, on each kid, that classroom is costing $600,000, $500,000 a year, and you have one teacher, and I don't think that teacher is costing $600,000 a year, and if that teacher is costing $600,000 a year, you should fire them because they're not doing a good job making all that money. But the thing is, it's just pouring more money. And that's what the server and the organizer do. You know, that's how they see the world. Oh, we just have to do more work. We just have to put in more resources, and things are gonna get okay, because they never get to the underlying issues. And that's not the solution. There was a story that that we were going to mention, but we'll skip it for now. It's related to this, but we'll mention it later. So there was another story that came out, and all these stories started coming out as we started talking about Damar Hamlin. I know it's not a coincidence. The headline on the Gateway Pundit said, "I told your dumb bleep, I'd kill you." Then it says, "Mugger's attempt to steal off-duty female cop's firearm ends poorly for him." So the story is that there was this off-duty Chicago cop, police officer, a black woman, who she broke up a fight between a mugger and someone else outside her apartment building. And then it says here, the video shows the officer walking away when the thief sneaks up behind her and grabs for her gun. And then she yells she'll kill him before firing two shots into her attacker to free herself. And there's a video of that of their fighting, or at least a picture of it, a photo of it. It says the mugger proceeds to say, you got me," but does not disengage. So she fired it at at the kid who happened to be black, and the kid, instead of saying, "Oh, you know, just letting go," he says, you got me," but still holds on to her and keeps fighting her. Sorry. So the young woman then fires a third shot, and then she said, "I told you're dumb. I guess I told you're dumb behind. I guess that's because they blank it out. I told you're dumb bleep. I'd kill you," the officer exclaims while firing what ended up being the fatal shot. Excuse me. The thief whimpers, "Please, baby, I'm sorry. I don't want to die." The woman then yells for uniformed police to arrive on scene, and the mugger died from wounds sustained from the shooting at a local hospital. And the female officer was treated for a laceration above her eye. So the thing is that so this woman tried to stop some sort of conflict. This mugger was trying to mug someone, and I guess she intervened to prevent the mugging, and she walked away, and the kid from behind tried to take her gun, and then they struggled, and she had to kill him. And this tell this shows a lot. This shows a fundamental problem in the black culture: no respect for authority. The woman was, well, and another thing, no respect for women. That's why they talk about bitches and hoes in the rap songs, and that's why they impregnate women, and couldn't care less about the baby or anything like that, because women are just things they use. And so this kid, who has no respect for authority, no respect for women, saw this woman, and she saw he saw her walking away. So he saw her vulnerable, and he something in him just said, "I will take advantage of this woman right now." So that's why he went for her gun, you know, while she was walking away with her back to him. And then as she struggled, he thought, "I am a man, she's a woman, I can overpower her," because that's what the black man believes. In the culture, it's been this thing of dominating, and because they have the conqueror personality. And when the conqueror personality goes astray, they start misusing it. And whenever they see someone weak, they try to take advantage of that person and overpower them and control them. And that's what he thought he could do with this woman. And the woman had to kill him. She had to prove to him that she was the authority and she was more powerful than him. But that is a manifestation of what's wrong in the black culture, and someone has to point this out. And it's not racism, it's just the reality. There's a problem in the black culture. The black preachers, the sons of bitches like Titty Jakes and all these other whores who preach from the pulpit every Sunday, preach a whole bunch of nonsense, worthless stuff that is of little to no use to anybody, but don't talk about these things. And don't they are black. They could be preaching stuff to call people out in black America and let them know what they're doing wrong. And if they believe in their God, they would be talking about how God, their God, despises all this nonsense. But no, they don't do that, because that wouldn't be popular, because that would just create division and separation, and we're about love and understanding and all this other stuff. So they go to their services, all these people, the stupid black pastors and all these idiot black church members go to the service every day, every Sunday, to jump up and down and shout hallelujah and shake and do all these things and snap their neck and do all this stuff. And it's all, and they end their service and it's all futile. It doesn't do anything. All they did was get a workout. They might have well have gone to the gym. But they're not transforming anything. They're not doing anything to change this. And you have these black thugs doing all this stuff, and none of them care. No one cares. No one. And if oh yeah, it's the problems we have. It's the white man oppressing us all this time, and that's why we are where we are. No, it's because you don't call this out. No respect for authority. No respect for women. No values. No principles. No fear. No fear of authority. You know, all these people go into church every Sunday, and in Black America, there seems to be no fear of a God, which is so ironic. There was another story that came out. We'll skip it. Let me go to another story here. A recent headline, again on the Gateway Pundit, horrifying, vicious teen mob brutally assaults man on a Philadelphia college campus. And if I'm not mistaken, it was in at Temple University. And there's a video, and I saw the video, and it's pretty disturbing. There was this guy, and I think he was white because the video is taken from a distance. I can't see too well, but you see a whole bunch of black kids that start gathering around this white guy, I believe. I don't know what happened. There was some sort of confrontation. Something happened, and he was walking away, but the one black guy starts going again towards him to attack him. And as he goes towards him, a whole bunch of black thugs start to join him, and they start beating up this guy in the middle of the street. And then two people come out of nowhere into the video, and a woman and a man, a young woman and a young man, and I think they're both white. The woman was looked white. The man I couldn't make out, but he kind of looked whitish. And he comes into the picture, and one the man kind of tries to pull one of the guys, kicking and beating up the man, away from the man, and for some reason, I don't know why, these young kids for some reason felt fear when these two young people showed up, and they walk away, and they leave the man alone, you know, on the ground after having beaten him up. And you can see, as the video zooms out, there are two black security people. And they have their, you know, yellow thing that they wear. You know, that fluorescent yellow thing that some of these people wear. And you can see them. And they're just standing there watching the whole thing. So they could have intervened to confront these black kids. And the two of them happened to be black. These two security people, and they were confirmed to be workers of the security people who work in the campus, who to, you know, to secure the place. And these two black adults did nothing to stop the black kids assaulting the white man. And it took two people, you know, that had nothing to do with security, two young brave people to get in the way and stop the attack. And it's amazing that this mob didn't go after the two young people as well. I don't know what it must have. It's almost like a superpower. They showed up and they repelled the young kids. And then there's another story. Why did we mention this story? The problem with no respect, the black culture, and also the people who have a position of authority. These two lazy security black people don't do anything. They don't confront the young people. There is no authority father figure. No one's saying, hey, I'm going to show you how to respect authority, how to respect the truth. Because if you don't respect authority, if you don't respect the truth, then you're not going to do anything with your life. And respecting authority goes more than just respecting a label, or respecting a priest or anything like that, because a lot of these people who are supposed authorities are worthless trash, you know, worthless people like Billy Graham and all these people who are reverend and revered and honored, but ended their lives in worthlessness. There's no respect that they deserve from anyone. So it's not by going by titles. It's authority. You can sense it, even in a person who doesn't have a title. If that person is living by the truth, then you respect him. If you see a police officer, you respect him based on what he represents. But if he starts behaving like a thug, then there's no respect that he or she deserves. But you respect the principle. That's the first pillar that we mentioned in the five, out of the five pillars that define authority. That awareness, there is an authority, it exists, and it's independent of us. And I have to be aware of it and honor it when I recognize it. And these people, young kids, black kids, are not doing that because no one is telling them, no one is confronting them about it. And the very black people who could do it themselves don't do it. The worthless T.D. Jakes and all these other bastards, worthless sons of bitches who preach from the pulpit every Sunday and say things in the name of a God that's not real. Because if their God was real, these things wouldn't be happening. That's what I'm saying. If their God was real, these things would not be happening. And no one questions, no one says, well, then we must be looking towards the wrong God. Because the God, they are following a matriarchal God, and a matriarchal God is as real as a three-eyed cyclops. There is no such thing. By definition, there can be no matriarchal God. And these people serve a matriarchal God and promote a matriarchal God. It's a false God that does not exist. It's a falsehood. And that's why they are involved in all these useless services. They literally, that's what they call it, a service, day after day, and don't achieve anything. There another story that came out is another school bus beating. Two black girls savagely pummel special needs child on school bus. Victim's mother to sue school. That was on the Gateway Pundit. This happened in Cutler Bay, Florida. It says, video obtained by CBS News Miami reporter Thursday shows a female student from Cutler Bay Middle School in Florida being brutally assaulted by two larger girls on a school bus. And can you guess what color the larger girls are? Yes, they are black. To make matters even worse, the victim is a 15-year-old special needs child. CBS News Miami reported that the incident took place on February 3rd, which was on a Friday. The video starts with the child desperately trying to fend off a large black girl before getting overpowered. It's not like on a bus. The bus driver can be heard shouting, "Hey, hey, hey," but makes only a half-hearted attempt to stop the beating. Roughly 13 seconds into the video, another girl arrives to join the assault. CBS News Miami later identified this girl as the large black girl's older sister. She does not attend the school, so who knows what she was doing there. The pummeling continues for another 13 seconds before the bus driver finally screams for Tiana, the first name of one of the assailants, to get off this damn bus, quote-unquote. And the child suffered a concussion as a result of the awful beating. And I saw the video. It's disturbing. The just pummeling. And that's one thing black people do a lot for some reason. When they get enraged, they start hit, like a machine gun, just one punch after the other, and they do it in this like vertical motion, straight motion, up and down, and they like to beat down on people. It's like a way of humiliating and showing that they are, have destroyed the other person. I don't know. It's an evil thing. It's demonic. It says, this violent attack comes shortly after another school bus assault in Homestead, Florida, which is just 15 miles from Cutler Bay, where teenage thugs viciously beat a 9-year-old girl. And I think we talked about this in a previous audio clip. One of the teen students involved in the assault is now facing criminal battery charges. The victim's mother has hired an attorney to sue the school for failing to protect her daughter. And I understand this lawsuit, but it bothers me that that's where it's kind of where it ends. Because it's not the school necessarily that's at fault. It's the culture. And it's like, oh, the school should have protected us. Yeah, no. If you're thinking of that way, then you missed the whole point. You missed the point that there's something wrong with the black culture that does this. And I believe that the two girls that were assaulted were, if not white, they might have been, I think they were of Hispanic descent, because the mother is called Johanna Velez, and Velez sounds like a Spanish name. And this happened in Florida. This is the second vicious attack like that in this month in Florida, where you know who is governor. And has the governor of Florida said anything? Ron DeSantis? I don't think so. At least it's not been made news. But if I'd been the governor and heard these two stories, I would have jumped on those stories to start to get out my soapbox and start speaking about how to transform the education system and how to deal with the problem of violence in the black culture. And say, hey, black America, we want you to be all you can be. A young mind is a terrible thing to waste. All, you know, you have said that you want to do something with your life, that and that you blame the white man for all the wrongs that have happened to you. Well, you have to take charge, and if you really want to live up to all the things you claim that have been taken away from you, then you have to start changing this, and the other. And we're going to start changing the education system to end this sort of violence, and to address it, and we have to start teaching values and principles to these kids. And if the teachers we have are not promoting the right values, then we have to change it. So he could have taken the lead and said, I care about Black America. I care about the education of Black people, and I care about the education system in general, and this is not going to stand. He could have taken that, but Republicans always stand like, oh no, I don't see color, I don't see thing. All I want is a good economy, a laissez-faire economy, and capitalism, and doing its thing, and then things are going to work out. Yes, and capitalism is good. A government that doesn't interfere is good. But you can't leave it at that. That's what the organizer does. The organizer says, I'm just going to organize things, and then things are going to work out. As if the organizer doesn't understand that there's an invisible reality that cannot be organized with methods and procedures. And if you don't deal with the invisible reality, there's something going on invisible in the black culture, invisible in the education system. If you don't deal with that, the problem is not going to go away. You can mitigate it, but it's going to always be there, and it's always going to resurface in a worse way. Because if you don't really clean things up, things eventually get worse. But there's DeSantis doing his service, all this other stuff, but the stuff that where he could be focusing on something like this happening in on his backyard, at his, in his own backyard. He's not dealing with it. And speaking of Florida, there was another story. Florida student knocks out, pounds unconscious teacher into floor over Nintendo Switch. And there's a video of it. And it's the same thing. This thing that black people have where they take somebody to the ground and start beating them with this like jackhammer kind of emotion with their arm, punching and punching down. And it says here, a 17-year-old student at Matanzas High School in Palm Coast, Florida, was arrested Tuesday after he shoved a teacher's aide so hard she flew in the air several feet. He then pounded her head into the floor, all because she took his Nintendo Switch away from him during class, according to police. He later spat on the victim and said when he comes back, he would kill her, police said. Video shows the 6'6" inch, 270-pound student raced after the woman, sent her flying across the floor, knocking her unconscious when she landed on her head. The student then kicked and repeatedly punched the victim in the head and body as she was knocked out until he was dragged away by several school employees and students. And I don't think it has said it so far, but you can guess what race the kid was. And interesting, just as a side comment, Matanzas, that's the name of the school. The word Matanzas, if you pronounce it the way it's, you know, they would pronounce it in Spain, Matanzas literally means killings. So ironic that he did this in what in Spain would be known as Killings High School. Weird name for a school, Matanzas, which means killings in Spanish. The sad thing is that that later on I saw this story of a lady who on the Daily Mail. The other story was I read it from the Gateway Pundit. This story from the Daily Mail, it says, "This is not this child's fault. He's not a threat. Mental health advocate launches defense of 6-foot-6-inch thug, 17, who had to be dragged off unconscious female teaching aide who he knocked out for confiscating his Nintendo Switch." So in other words, there was this woman who came out on social media, this woman defending the thug because he has mental health issues, so we shouldn't see him as the victimizer. He's the victim of the system, and we have to help him. The system is broken. So she's saying the right words. The system is broken, but her solution is more service. We have to provide more mental health services, and that's what we have to do. Because this kid doesn't know what he's doing, and yes, they took his Nintendo Switch away, and that bothered him because he needs the Nintendo Switch. They need that sort of thing to distract their minds because they have this problem, and they need something to distract them from their violent tendencies. And when the teacher took that away, it was really taking away his what distracted him from his outbursts, and you know, that sort of service attitude instead of judging and declaring this is wrong, there's something wrong here. Yes, the kid may have mental problems, but the fact that the mental problems manifest in such deep violence says something. There's something wrong with the kid, how he was brought up. There's something wrong with him, and he has chosen to be like that. There's an element of choice. Otherwise, he's just an animal. Let's just put him, let's cage him away, put him in a cage somewhere, and put chains on him, or get him to, you know, put him in a plantation, take him to slavery again. If you think black people are not responsible for their behavior, then slavery is the solution again. Because then you're saying they're animals. And then, yes, then it's the only way to deal with animals is to chain them, enslave them, and use them. Like you do with, you know, regular animals. Either you believe in something or you don't. If you believe black people are people, then you should treat them as people and make them accountable as a people, as human beings. If you think they are of a lower level of accountability, then you're saying they're less human than you. That's what you're saying. And if that's the case, then we have to treat them like animals. And they don't deserve to be treated like human beings or be called human beings. But so this foolish white woman, you know, defending the kid and blaming the system, but in the wrong way, and saying the solution is more mental health services for the kid, instead of saying, no, there's something wrong. Something is driving this violence. But, well, you know. And speaking of violence, another story on the Daily Mail says, pictured. Journalist 24 gunned down while reporting a murder after killer returned to the scene and shot him. Heartbroken fiance says, "I'll never be the same again," as smirking suspect 19, who also shot a girl 9 and a woman 20, is arrested. So what happened was, there was this journalist who was reporting at a murder scene in Pine Hills, Florida. Again, in Ron DeSantis' backyard. This is all happening in Florida. This is if the truth is saying to Ron DeSantis, "Hey, listen, there's a problem. I'm putting it in front of you to see it, and you still don't react to it." Dylan Lyons, 24, was killed, and his Spectrum News 13 colleague was injured on duty while broadcasting about a local homicide that had occurred at the same location 5 hours earlier. So they were there reporting, and it says, moments after the journalist was gunned down, a 9-year-old girl and her mother were allegedly also shot by the same suspect. And the suspect is called Keith Melvin Moses, 19, a career criminal with a lengthy rap sheet, sneered and smiled as he was handcuffed on Wednesday in connection to the three shootings. Seems like he killed a journalist, who knows why, and then he went into a house nearby, just went in, and who knows why, and shot a 9-year-old girl and her mother. And then they caught him, and he's just, and I see the picture of him, worthless little son of a bitch, just smirking. As if he had done nothing, and there's a mugshot of him looking like a moron, and he just took these lot, and he was born in Philadelphia. The journalist was born in Philadelphia, the one who got gunned down, but he was working in Florida, and another example of people who have no respect for others. No respect for authority, no respect for anything. It's just opportunism and arrogance. And ironically, he's being taken away in handcuffs by a black officer and a white officer on each side, on either side. And it's sad. And the guy is smirking, literally smirking. It's like he has this stupid spiked hair, a black worthless life that does not matter. He doesn't value the lives of others. Yet these people, are the same who go out on the street and riot and loot and say Black Lives Matter, but they don't care about lives. And they shoot each other all the time. You know, 80 to 90% of blacks murdered are murdered by other blacks. And no one is saying anything. The Republicans don't speak out about this because it's a dangerous issue and we're going to be called racist and this and that. But if you really care about your brother, you have to speak it out. If you care about your American brother who happens to be black, you're going to speak about these things. And not only criticize, but also offer hope and say, we're going to do these things and you're going to work with us. You need to work with us so that we can help, so that you can help yourself. And Damar Hamlin is on his journey. Patrick Mahomes is chatting it up with leftist bastards like Jimmy Kimmel. Ron DeSantis is busy doing his organizing. And Donald Trump, who lives in Florida, not a peep from him either. He couldn't care less about all these things. He does not give a damn about any of this. He could not care less. And all we hear is criticism from conservatives, but no one speaks out, no one says anything about anything. And speaking of DeSantis, another story that came out on noqreport.com, it says Ron DeSantis expected to secure $10 million to fly illegal aliens to sanctuary cities. So he's doing his little organizing thing, his clever little thing that we've spoken about before. Which sounds like a smart idea to, you know, take it to the liberals who always talk about compassion and who are all for illegal immigration, and actually illegal immigration is a bit of an oxymoron. It's more illegal invasion, but they like the illegal invasion. So DeSantis has said, I'm going to ship all these people to the blue states, and he's been doing so. And a whole bunch of Hispanics walking around in the New York area nowadays, and I see them all over the place. So they are flooding the area too, this part of the country, and a lot of them come from Florida. And the thing is that he's doing all this, and it sounds so clever, but there's a certain stupidity in it, because first of all, what you're doing is just helping these illegals go further inland. Instead of driving them out, you're helping them get established inside the country. So you're not doing the country any good. Yeah, you're doing Florida good, but then you're leaving the problem to other states. Well, those states like that sort of problem, let them deal with it. But it's federalism again at work. It's, you know, I am my state. I am a rock. I am an island. You know, singing the old Simon Garfunkel song. And I'm going to shift the problem to another state and let them deal with it because they deserve it. But then the whole country suffers because when all these illegals come here, then they get federal benefits and help and all this stuff through those states that enable them, and then sometimes they even get to vote, as we're going to mention in other stories, and then they affect national elections. So even though they're not in Florida anymore, they're still hurting Florida from the outside and hurting all the other states and hurting the country in general. So the solution, if Ron DeSantis really cared, would be to send them to Puerto Rico. And we've said this before. Send them to Puerto Rico. And let... Now, Puerto Rico is not a state, so if they stay there, they can't vote. I don't think Puerto Rico can vote on anything, I think. I'm not sure. And I don't think they have representatives in Congress, or they have symbolic representatives at best. The thing is that you would be sending them back to Latin America. So you technically didn't kick them out of the country, but you also didn't keep them within the real United States. And he could be doing that, but there is no creativity in these people. They're not visionary. They're just organizers. Ron DeSantis is a good organizer. He's a good server and a good organizer, but that's all he is. There is no more substance behind him. And he's supposed to be a, quote, Christian. You would think that if he had access to a God who is real, that the God who is real would say to him, hey, do this. And he would be doing it. Instead, he just offloads the problem and acts in an attitude of federalism. All I care about is my own state and let other states deal with it. But the problem comes back at the end to bite us all in Florida and everywhere in the country. And while he's worried about shipping illegal aliens to New York City, you have all this violence in his own state and he's not dealing with it, not addressing it, not confronting it. He's not worried about... you know, how to deal with the problem of violence in the black neighborhoods, in the black schools, mostly black schools. How to change the education system to enable these people and end the culture of violence, and how to provide more security in the schools, things like that. It says another story, a recent story, headline said it on the Gateway Pundit, Rhode Island bill would make it possible for illegal immigrants to vote. What we were saying a moment ago. So they were proposing a bill that was making its way through the system in Rhode Island that would make it possible for non-citizens to vote in municipal elections. And it says here another New England state, Vermont, is currently trying to do the same thing. And the thing is, even if they don't make it official, eventually, if you, like in California, illegal aliens can get driver's licenses. And once you get a driver's license, it's like that opens the door for a lot of things. And sometimes even, I think they might even get registered to vote automatically when they get their driver's license. And then they end up voting somehow. Because again, the stupid founding fathers left it in the Constitution that every state can decide their own election laws. So that's why we have this nonsense. Then some states decide, oh, we're going to let illegal aliens vote. And, or we're going to be lax about it. You know, we're going to look the other way. We're not really going to verify if you really are a citizen or not a citizen. But if you want to vote for president, go ahead. You know, make our day. You know, vote for whoever you want. We're not going to question you because we don't want to profile you. We don't want to be racist. We want to be inclusive, blah, blah, blah. And the founding fathers left it in place like that. Every state can do their own thing. Federalism, again, in play. And this is happening, and the conservatives complain about it, and no one goes, well, what is the problem here that the founding fathers left this in the Constitution? But the conservatives worship the founding fathers, so they never go there in their heads. So it's like they have all this futile complaining, but they don't address the root issue, because addressing the root issue would mean making the founding fathers look bad. No one says, well, we have to change the system to establish the national, clear national rules on how elections should be run, who is eligible, and so forth, at all levels. And then there's another story. New Mexico senators, with blessing of corrupt Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse Oliver, push legislation that fully corrupts New Mexico elections and criminalizes those who investigate. So, in short, there's this in New Mexico, they're trying to make it like illegal or a crime to question elections. And again, because every state decides how to legislate their own regulate their own elections, they can do things like this, and no one can say do anything about it, thanks to the founding fathers. These conservatives criticize all this, and no one says, "Hey, wait, what is the root of this?" No one cares. It's as if the system is broken, the system is failing, producing all these stupid results, and no one wants to target the system. They only want to target the people who are abusing the system. And again, another story, New Mexico bill on the Gateway Pundit, New Mexico bill aims to lower voting age to 16. Again, yes, you would say, oh, that's just in city, county, and statewide elections, not federal elections. No, but no. There's something wrong with 16-year-old kids voting, especially how stupid they've gotten in recent decades. I mean, a 16-year-old 50 years ago, you know, maybe had a better chance of having an intelligent decision or thought, as opposed to the 16-year-old now. They're complete idiots now. This is the most stupid generation in American history. That's why this is the generation that kills America. America's about to die in less than 7 months. So if I'm in New Mexico, now I'm trapped that my life is going to be decided by all these 16-year-old idiots. But then if you don't like it, move out of New Mexico. That's the Federalist answer all the time. And that's not the way it is. And my rights are being violated, because that means a violation of my right to a personal domain. The right to vote is derived from the 10th pillar, the 5th of the second set of 5 pillars, which means the right to a personal domain. That's from there derives the right to vote. If my vote gets distorted by people who shouldn't be voting, then my right to a personal domain gets violated, because my life is being determined by morons who don't know what they're doing. And if my rights being violated, it doesn't matter if I'm in New Mexico or Texas or California or Kuala Lumpur, my right is being violated, and hence that should be prohibited. But to the federalists or the person who believes in federalism, that does not matter. And the thing is, even if it were local, it always happens. Once you start allowing them to vote in local elections, they end up voting in national elections too, because the system just turns the other way. You know, it's once they're on the voter rolls, then they print out the ballot for everybody. It's not like there's a ballot just for people who are 16 and a ballot for people who are over 18. You see what I'm saying? Then they start just making one ballot for everybody. And since you're 16, you can vote in local elections, but the ballot also allows you to vote for the president. And who's going to check that? Because it's being run by Democrats, by a certain party, and the Constitution protects things at the state level, they can do whatever shenanigans at the state level, then whatever party controls the state, then can control, then regulates the elections in that state. That's what was happening in Reconstruction after the Civil War. The southern states didn't want black people to be free, didn't want them to vote, so they made up all these laws under the protection of the founding fathers. In the Constitution, they made up all these Jim Crow laws to prevent black people voting. So they were able to control who voted and who didn't vote at the local level, and they distorted it. So they were allowed to, and who was in control of the southern states? The Democrat Party. So the party who is in control of the state can control the elections. And then corruption sets in, and that's how the southern states kept corruptly denying black people the right to vote for so many years. It's just common sense to look at it and go, my goodness, that is a stupid idea. We should remove that from the Constitution. But no, the Founding Fathers were the second coming of Moses. So whatever they said, that's the truth. That's God wrote the Constitution. He inspired Madison and all the other guys to write every word. I mean, we could do Bible codes, you know, like they say in the Bible that you can, if you skip certain number of characters in the original Hebrew text, you get messages and stuff like that. I think the conservatives think the same way of the Constitution. We should do these Bible codes from the Constitution to see if there's a prophecy about the future in the Constitution. That's how sacred these idiots, morons, think these documents are. They're just temporary. They work for a while despite themselves. We survived and thrived despite the flaws, not because of them, in the Constitution. Because we had a different quality of people and it was a different time, so we had a different accountability too. But as time went on, the flaws, it's like, you know, you have a hole in the wall and it's summer, then, you know, the worst that can happen is you have a lot of, you know, hot air coming through at night. But if you leave that hole there and winter comes, that hole is going to make your house hell and you won't be able to stay warm. And if it gets, you know, below zero or below 10 degrees, then 10 degrees Fahrenheit, then you're going to suffer big time. And you didn't suffer that way in the spring or the summer because it was a different time. And that's what we've had. We've kept the hole, and the hole has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger because we've never fixed it. And conservatives don't want to fix it. That's why the country is dying. And just to finish, there was another story on the Wall Street Journal. I don't know how true this is, but I think there's a ring or a partial truth to it. It says Donald Trump changes tune on mail-in voting ballot collection. So apparently he and his people have decided that they are going to play the game of ballot harvesting the way Democrats have and to promote mail-in voting because they were against it naturally, because there should not be mail-in voting. That should be unconstitutional. You should be present. If you want to vote and if it's that important to you, you should show up in person. If you cannot show up in person, then I'm sorry, then you can't vote. You can't vote. If it's that important to you, you will set apart the time. Now, if you're physically disabled, then, you know, who knows, that's a different story. But this mail-in voting was not made because some people are crippled and cannot make it to the voting station. That's not why they made this. And that case should be considered. I really don't know how to solve it, but I think that at least for now, the standing solution should be you should be able to go to the voting place on the day of the election to vote. And if you can't do that, you're either dead or you can't vote or you're not interested enough. And there has to be a presence thing. And even with the military, I think we made a mistake from the beginning to allow the concept of them mailing in their ballots. Because if they are serving abroad, they should be able to vote at the military station where they are. As simple as that. I mean, but they should be voting in person. And because it's run by the government, we can easily set up, you know, people who are, you know, auditors and whatever is needed in any regular voting place, we can set it up in military stations, and they should be voting in person as if they were here in the U.S. It shouldn't be a problem. And on election day. So Donald Trump was against all of this, but now his team seems to be saying, okay, we're going to play their game too. And you would say, oh, how clever of them. And I've always said, yeah, you have to play their game. If they act that this way, then you have to, you can't play nice. You have to play the other way too. But the thing is that this is stupid. This sounds smart, but it's just stupidity. The Democrats did not win, quote, in 2020, because they did more ballot harvesting. They invented ballots and stuffed them into the counting. They stuffed fake ballots. If you take Republicans and say, instead of you going to vote on election day, you send in your ballot. What's the difference? Most of them are already against, were leery of mailing in their ballots naturally. So they went out to vote. So instead of going to vote, they're going to send the ballot. How many votes did you gain by that? Nothing. Because you just transferred the vote from presidential to by mail. That's all you did. But with Democrats, that's not the same case. They are stuffing the ballot. So if we are going to say, oh, we're going to play the same game, what are you doing? You're saying you are giving legality or validity. You are certifying, saying, yeah, this is a valid way of a country, for a country to run their voting through everybody voting by mail. That is stupid. So you're certifying the system that is enabling them to, allowing them to stuff the ballots with fake ballots. All you did was give them more power to continue stealing elections. I don't know if I'm making sense, but this is the stupidity of people like Donald Trump and all the conservatives. They just don't understand. They don't want to go to the root of the problem. The first root is, as we've said over and over again, states should not regulate their own elections, because that allows the party in power in every state to run local corruption that is outside of the view of the rest of the country. They can do it behind the scenes at the local level. And then you have to fight every corruption at every state individually, instead of having this national set of rules that are clear and well-defined. He should be speaking against mail-in balloting. And doing all and a lot of other concrete things, but instead he's just playing the game. That's why if he lives to run to be in the ballot in 2024, he's going to lose. But I believe he's going to be dead by then. He's an idiot and he does not deserve to be in the White House ever again. And why doesn't he deserve to be in the White House ever again? Because, I guess we'll leave that for the next audio snippet. We were going to talk about other stories that expose even more why he should not be there. While he's doing all this, let me put it to you very briefly. While he's doing all this futile service of going to East Palestine and handing out Big Macs and all this and taking photo ops and all this and trying to look at, what good does it do to East Palestine for him to be doing that? Oh, other than the photo op and all this stuff, and maybe bringing attention to East Palestine, really? When he should be fighting for the January 6th prisoners, he should be in Washington, as we've said over and over again. He should be fighting for them. He should be camping out in front of the prison where these men are being held. And these videos came out, we weren't going to talk about that, the videos that came out about the violence, the brutal violence, and no one's doing anything about the brutal violence the police, the DC police did that day. Unprovoked attacks on the crowd that day, because they wanted to incite a riot, to have a reason to, for a bloodshed, and then, decrying conservatives and all that stuff. And so this video came out of all that happened, and no one's doing anything. I mean, this should be enough to indict people. And Mike, where's McCarthy, the son of a bitch, a worthless Speaker of the House? Why isn't he indicting anyone? Why isn't any, now that the Republicans have control of the House at least, why aren't they passing legislation to criminalize this sort of stuff? Nothing. So they're all just doing all the Futile service. Donald Trump going around handing out Big Macs at East Palestine, Ohio. While he should be doing the real job of rescuing these people who are trapped in for, what, 3 years without being convicted or anything, just in prison, being treated like dirt. And there were young people supporting him who were murdered that day for him. And he's not doing a thing. The real service he should be doing, he's not doing. That is why this country is going to be dead in 7 months. The truth has been speaking to this country. This country does not want to understand. The stupid American churches are continuing with their matriarchal nonsense. I've been watching on television. I see that by mistake, by accident. Sometimes I see. I flip through the Christian channels, and it seems like these Christians are just going, trying to go back to normal. I can feel them just like trying to get up off their feet and trying to return to the normal, regularly scheduled programming. And their same sermons and their same nonsense and same stupid preaching, and nothing has changed. As if all of this that happened for the last 3 years didn't happen. So that's why there is no hope. There is no hope for this country, because the people who could change it, who could bring a transformation, revival, a redefining of everything in this country, are not interested. And that's why this country deserves to die, and it will be dead in 7 months. Thank you very much for listening.